And I'm not commenting on that. What did Easter look like for you at Harold Hill?
Brilliant. So we don't meet on a Sunday. We meet on a Friday evening from 4 till 6. We have a community bring and share meal, and we break bread and share communion and do lots of family activities through that. And we're normally outnumbered at least 2-1 children to adults, sometimes 3-1, depending on how big the families who come along are. So for us, all our activities have to be very much able to, for the children to kind of gain access to what we're doing. So on Maundy Thursday this year, we had our Passover curry, and the naan bread is the unleavened bread, which we pass around. We encouraged everyone to come wearing black, because black is obviously a mourning colour, and to come and express that for Christians that Thursday evening, getting ready for Good Friday, is a time of grief and a time of expressing grief. So we shared an amazing curry together, but we also shared stories of those relatives who had died and who were significant to us. And we remembered our own grief as we thought about Jesus and his journey towards the cross and the grief of the disciples. And then on Good Friday, we didn't meet together because we work with some wonderful people, but are quite chaotic, so it's quite hard for them to kind of gather regularly. But we encouraged everyone to wear red and put photos up on Facebook of them wearing red to signify the blood of Jesus from Good Friday. Then Easter Saturday, we did nothing silent. We stayed quiet. Well, my children didn't stay quiet. I can't imagine anybody else did, but as a church, we were quiet. And then on Easter Sunday afternoon, we held a celebration, a Jesus has risen party, where we encouraged people to come with as many different colours on as they could, as rainbow-esque, signalling life and redemption and forgiveness. And we had party food, and we shared the story of the resurrection of that first Easter Sunday. But we gave every child emotion card. They all made emotion faces. So angry, sad, shocked, and puzzled, I think. And as we read the story, we stopped and said, how would you feel if you were Mary and found the tomb? And they all held up their emotion cards. And part of that is just to help them engage with the story. But part of that is because we work with people who haven't really learn how to manage their emotions very well. And so we're constantly looking for ways to kind of help people be healthy people through what we do. So it was Easter, but we were also talking about emotions. It was Maundy Thursday, but we were talking about grief and getting connected with our story and our relatives and how helpful that is. So yes, that's what Easter looked like for us.
Sounds amazing. What are the biggest challenges you face?
I think the biggest challenges are we work with some amazing people. They're our friends, but I think chaos and crisis define most of their lives. So that means planning anything is really hard work. And also, they're kind of, bless them, they're wonderful people, but they're very draining. And there's a team, 5 adults, myself and my wife, Alison. We're part-time. And we have another Baptist minister, a wonderful lady called Alex, but she works for Urban Expression because we're an Urban Expression team as well, and she works for the Anabaptist Network, and her husband is a mass teacher. So there are, and then we have a lovely lady called Liz from Romford Baptist Church. So there are 5 kind of stable, in inverted commas, adults, and the rest of our community. So it's the challenge is trying to work with, we gather between 30 and 40 on a Friday night, and like I said, at least 20 of those are always children, ranging from 6 months up to 13, 14. So that's quite an intense evening to kind of share food. It's great fun. You'll all be welcome anytime. Bring some earplugs. but that is a challenge now to plan and have the energy to do that.
So who funds you as you are so different?
Thank you. Well, you do, actually, because we are funded by Home Mission. So we are very, very grateful for your church's contributions to Home Mission, because we are funded in part by Home Mission. We're funded in part by Romford Baptist Church, who kept the original manse from Harold Hill Baptist Church. So my family and I, we live in the manse there. And we live a little bit by faith, and then a little bit, Alice and I have 2 little part-time jobs as well to kind of keep us going. But I just, you know, as a Home Mission church, I want to say thank you, because you give faithfully to Home Mission. So hopefully this puts a little bit of a face on what where your money is going, and it doesn't sound too scary, hopefully.
No. So you've talked about the challenges. Tell us about some of the opportunities that are facing you at the moment.
I think I had a sabbatical last year, which was partly because I burnt out because of juggling so much need, but that gave an opportunity for people from within the community to take ownership and to keep church. We're called Church 123. That's a long story. Ask me over coffee afterwards. But to keep Church 123 going, and people took that opportunity. And then when we came back from sabbatical, they all went, "Oh, well, we're not doing any more of that. You can carry on." But actually, there are some really good leadership skills among our friends, despite the chaotic and hard lives they live. And our opportunities are really to try and mentor them. We are passionate about being a Baptist community. We want to be a discerning community together, which is very interesting because of the way we meet. So it's hard work and it's slow, but it's a great opportunity, particularly because we met a lot of these people through social services, referring them to us to do parenting courses. So a lot of our friends have never really had a voice in what's happening to them. So to come into a discerning community where actually we say, "Actually, you, I want to hear what you've got to say, because the Holy Spirit works through you and me, and it's the same Holy Spirit. I'm not more important than you," is a very powerful thing to be able to say to broken people. And they are getting that, and it's brilliant. So the opportunities really to see people flourish, to have their own identity, to take on God-given roles that we can see they've got, but that their low self-esteem isn't quite helping them see that at the moment. So I think these are our opportunities. Also, the huge number of children mean that working with the adults, sometimes it does feel like banging a brick against the head. Do you know what I mean? That thing. Yeah, thank you. But actually, working with the children, one of the Anglican ministers came up to me and said, "Oh, one of the kids from your church came to our church for a visit, very biblically literate." And we worked out which child this was, basically because the child had ginger hair and I knew exactly who it was. And I was like, wow, Tony said all that. I couldn't believe it. That this lad, Tony, bless him, he's a bit of a handful. He always says he's bored. He always hates the church stuff, just wants to play football. But actually, when given the opportunity, he could tell this Anglican minister exactly what communion was all about, what the cup and the plate and the bread and all that represented. So I'm very excited about what we are doing maybe for the next generation as well.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can sit down. You'll be hearing more from Rich in a few moments.
Well, it is a real privilege to be here, primarily because it's nice just to have people sit and listen rather than run around and throw things and try and leave. So I believe you've been on this journey thinking about mission. If we have the title slide, please, Dan. And I'm going to read you a short reflection, a poem, if you may. And I am then going to ask you, what do you think about this? And then I'm going to ask you to talk to your neighbours about what you think about it. So if you're not sitting next to someone you like, this is the time to move quickly or just deal with them during the next half an hour or so. So where am I? Once a week, I feel compelled to join a community for an hour or so. So where am I? I'm greeted by the shepherd of this flock, whether they are on duty or not. They are always there to check who is attending and who is not. I am inspired by this shepherd. They show concern for all, even those who are clearly hard work and who often make a nuisance of themselves. This shepherd is there almost every week without fail, serving this community in many ways which are not noticed or thanked. And when this community is threatened, the shepherd stands tall to protect their flock. So where am I? My hour or so in this little community always has the same rhythm, the same sacred topics of conversation, those whose voices are heard louder than others, and those whose voices who are ignored when they bravely speak up. Everyone has their own seats, their own positions of residence within this little community, and every week there in the same place they gather to reflect on their day, their week, on their life. So where am I? The seasons have their rhythm. At Christmas, St. George's Day, Easter, Guy Fawkes, and others are observed, with the buildings decorated accordingly. There are those who control the music, mainly tunes from one era. the era of their heyday. These are played and played and sung along to, unless, of course, someone younger makes a more radical choice, which is often bemoaned as being far too trendy or inappropriate for the occasion. A community which welcomes its own with open arms, but on the whole is sexist, racist, and homophobic. So where am I? I am humbled by the way they care for each other. Yes, there is plenty of gossip and moaning about the way things are and the way they are not as they once were. But this little community know how to gather around one another and to offer support. In this community, those without work are found work, and those without a home on Christmas Day gather for lunch to eat together as a family. So where am I? My local or my local church? So two questions. What is your reaction to the poem? And is the poem fair to the church? What is your reaction to the poem? And is the poem fair to the church? Turn around and discuss that with your two or three people around you. Go for it. Okay, let's gather. I would happily hear your comments. Again, a coffee over at the end. So in our two readings of the same story, but from different Gospels, is a story which produces in me many questions and reflections. What questions do these two accounts of this one story produce in you? Lisa read them beautifully, but I'm going to read them again. And then I'm going to ask you to turn to those around you and say, and answer the question, what questions do these readings produce in you? So Matthew 8 first. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, a large crowd followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, see that you don't tell anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them. And then Mark 1. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus was indignant, reached his hand out and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourselves to the priests and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in the lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. What questions does that one story and the two accounts create for you? Please turn to your friends and chat away. Okay, let's come back together. I sat with these three people on the front. There were some good comments. Does anyone want to be brave and put their hand up? Shall I just repeat it? Is that probably easier? Or shall I run? Lisa will run. Yeah, that's a good idea. Lisa will run.
I'm going to get your coffee.
Mine's decaf, but I don't think you've got any up here, have you?
I'll check.
Oh, thank you. At the back, sir, at the back.
For me, Jesus was misunderstood. He was such a person of miracle made in man. There was no explanation to why he was so great, and still to some people today.
Okay, so there's a question there about the identity of Jesus in this story. That's really helpful. Thank you. Somebody, anybody else? Going to be brave. This gentleman in the pink jumper said something really good, and I overheard him. Do you remember what you said, sir? Yeah, no, you may have been repeating what somebody else said, but it was good. So take the credit.
We don't have leprosy today, but we have an excluded set of people. Okay. I mean, in leprosy, you go around with your bell, unclean.
Okay, yeah.
Who are those people today?
So what is leprosy today? Who is leprosy? Yeah, brilliant. Yes, this lady down here. Come on, Lisa, people waiting.
We wondered why Jesus said the leper should not tell anybody. It's an exciting thing. I mean, being made whole of leprosy, it's something you should go about announcing it. Even your body language will tell everybody that, look, something good must have happened to this person. So we're wondering, why will Jesus tell him not to tell anyone?
Yeah, that is a great challenge in the story. You say his body language, his body. I mean, he may be missing parts that he had got back. I mean, the story, again, I'm a detail person. I'm like, what does it mean he had leprosy? He had like a little bit of eczema looking leprosy, or he was missing ears and nose? I mean, how much did Jesus heal? That's one of my questions out of this story. I want to know. That's a great question. Thank you. Anybody else got an observation before we kind of dig into this text? Anybody got anything else? Oh, this lady here.
I was interested in the fact that he said, if you are willing to heal me. He'd obviously gone expecting to be healed. So why, if you are willing to heal me?
There's something about the reputation of Jesus in that, isn't there? Thank you. I'm sure what the other group said was deeply profound and not just, what's the new Top Gear going to be like conversation. So for me, out of this comes some questions that I'd like to throw out to you, and also questions for myself. This is probably my favourite Bible story. So when Lisa asked me to come talk about mission, I knew immediately which story I was going to speak on. The first one is, first question are, who are those around you? Who are those around you? I think we've got that on a screen. Look at that. Brilliant, isn't it? I apologise about the just words PowerPoint, but I ran out of time to do pretty pictures with it as well. For me, when I read the Gospels, it's quite simple who Jesus ministered to. Jesus ministered to those who were around him. People bump into Jesus in all sorts of places, and then we have ministry happening. Now, throughout the gospel, Jesus is clearly deliberately going to some places. He is particularly deliberately going to the cross. But on that journey, like the man in our story today, people come across his path. And as he encounters people, he ministers to them. Or, as we said, because this person sought him out, as people sought him out, he ministers to them. Think about the Gospels. It's full of stories of that. He's walking through a crowd and a woman comes up and touches the hem of his coat. He's busy doing something while his friend Lazarus is dying. We don't know what. Again, the Gospels always miss out the bits of information that I'd really quite like to know. But your friend's dying, Jesus, I've got something important to do, but we'll get there. And when I get there, then I'll minister. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus ministers to people. Our church name, Church 123, actually comes from Matthew 1:23, which is Emmanuel, God with us. The Message version says God moved into the neighborhood. And we see this throughout Jesus' ministry. Whatever neighborhood Jesus was in, that was whom Jesus ministered to. And that's the same for me and you. I am called to a place. I'm a church minister. I have a privilege of working for a church. But throughout my day, throughout my week, others come into my path. Whether it be the person at the checkout queue, whether it be the postman, whether it be my nephews or my nieces on Skype or FaceTime or any other media-based kind of way of viewing relatives these days. Wherever I am, people cross my path. People cross your path. You are called to a work, to a job, to a weekly activity. Maybe you've finally been called into retirement. Yes, some people are pleased about that. And that's what God has for you, your vocation. But in that vocation, people will be crossing your path. People will be surrounding you. People will be around you all the time. And those are the people to whom I believe God calls us to minister to. The Bible is full of people being on the way to somewhere and finding a God opportunity across their path. The story of the people of Exodus is constantly a story of people coming across the Israelites' path. Some are friends, some are foe. But it's an encounter to do God's work. I'm sure in the last couple of weeks you will have read the story from the road to Emmaus. Two disciples fleeing the city after the crucifixion of their Lord and Savior, full of questions, don't know what's happening. And as they're walking along a road, they meet a stranger. And then they say to this stranger, oh, why don't you come to our house so we can share with you? Little do they know they're actually wanting to share and serve the risen Lord. The opportunities God puts across our path is mission. We're thinking about the BMS teams. We've got one of the teams coming to us, and they have been out in different places. Was it Croatia you said, or Kosovo, a lady from this church has been involved in. But to get there, she would have gone through the airport, through training. She'd have been to Birmingham. There would have been other people placed in her path for her to minister to as she was fulfilling God's call on her life. And that's the same for you and me. The opportunity God puts across our path is mission. The opportunity to speak out for Jesus, to build his kingdom, to act in a Christ-like way, whether it be work colleagues, neighbors, cleaners, students, family members. Who is around you? Who are those that you can be Jesus to? If we have the next slide up, please. In your group, just, you may name people, others in your group don't know at all, or maybe a group of people. Who are those around you? Who are those you can be Jesus to? Right, we've got pens and paper down here if you want to write a list as a group. You don't have to. Type it out on a phone. Off you go. Who are those around you? I hope that's just been a helpful thing, just to think about who are those around you. Maybe you've been surprised. Maybe it was an obvious list. So the first thing I think about this story is who are those around you as this man crosses Jesus' path? The second thing is, and links into that question about leprosy, is who are you willing to be associated with? Who are you willing to be associated with? For me, one of the most profound moments in this story, and it's in both accounts, is the touch. Jesus touches the unclean man before he is made clean. And I find that a profoundly challenging two or three word part of the story. I'm all for dealing with cleaned people. But the touch before. Jesus steps in to the man's loneliness, isolation, and rejection before he heals him. Now, I wish my healings were as quick as that of Jesus's. Because it often means my contact with somebody who is unclean, in inverted commas, by society standards, is going to be a lot longer. That little reflection or poem that I read at the beginning is based on a pub that I went to. When I first went to Harold Hill, I felt called to drink in the worst pub on Harold Hill. So everybody I met for 3 months, I asked, what's the worst pub on the hill? What's the worst pub on the hill? And the Pompadours won the survey by a long way. And I went in there, and no one spoke to me for 6 weeks. I went in every Sunday night, and I drank one pint, knees quivering, and left. And then one night, I plucked up the courage to kind of stand a bit closer and a bit closer and a bit closer to the landlord as those 6 weeks went on, and then X Factor was on, and he was talking about how rubbish it was, and I felt I could join in with all authenticity and agree with him about that. And then he asked me what I did, and I told him I was a minister. And then he banned everybody in the pub from swearing, which I thought was going to be a tall order. And then, because it's quite an East End pub, this pub, and the slums that were cleared to produce Harold Hill in the first place were from East London and from North London. So West Ham and Tottenham, hot spots. And then he asked me the question I dreaded more than anything else. I didn't mind being associated as a Christian. I did not mind being associated even as a church minister. But he asked me what football team I supported. And I said Arsenal. And he broke his own swearing ban quite excessively in the following few moments. And then it was actually his wife who ran the pub, and bless him, Terry died a few months later of cancer, lung cancer. Apparently it had nothing to do with the 60 cigarettes he smoked every day. According to him, biggest funeral I've ever done, 500 people, most amazing floral tributes. But I kind of faithfully drank in there until the pub shut a couple of months ago, as lots of pubs are doing. And that reflection came out of this thing. I come to the pub on a Sunday night, and actually, how much difference is there between the pub and the church? And the landlady, she doesn't want to know about Jesus. She often would come and talk to me. She said, "I like talking to you, Rich. You're normal." And I used to feel for Mandy, because if I was her benchmark for normal, that was a bad, bad world to be living in. What amazed me about going in the Pompadours was how few people from Harold Hill would come with me into the Pompadours. And the Pompadours asked us to do a carol service, so we landed up doing a carol service, and then they asked us to do an Easter carol service, which was a bizarre request, but we did like an Easter family fun day and had all sorts of fun with that. Amazing. Easter Sunday afternoon, over 100 people representing 20, 30 families, all non-Christians coming together to celebrate Easter. It was bonkers and brilliant and a God thing. But we could not get Harold Hill families to come with us. We're not going in that pub. That is the most awful pub in the world. Not true by reputation. I mean, it wasn't pleasant. I'm not going to say it had potpourri in the toilets or anything like that, but it wasn't as bad as they made out. The gospel story has always been about being willing to associate with those others would not. The gospel story has always been about being willing to associate with those others would not. Whatever your view on the politics of the jungle in Calais, both opposite sides of the European referendum debate using Calais as a fear-mongering scapegoat reason. We can't leave the euro, otherwise we'll have to take them all. We got to leave the euro, otherwise we'll have to take them all. But in the midst of that, I'm so glad that through Urban Expression, there is a Baptist minister working there 2 days a week to do peacemaking between the different nationalities. Willing to risk to associate with those for whom, certainly in the national press, certainly locally, Harold Hill has an extremely right-wing prejudice against everything foreign. So my wife Alison went to the jungle for a day with, as a part of Urban Expression team leaders, got the opportunity to go and visit. And people just couldn't get their head round why she would go. The gospel has always been about willing to associate with those others would not. And in the touch of Jesus, just the smallest part of this story, for me, we get a huge chunk of the gospel described, embodied, and explained to us. What are the challenges of associating with those others will not? How can you connect with those around you who perhaps in need of that touch? Do you need to add to your list of those around you? Are there those, as we talked, you forgot the office cleaner? Or the person who never gets invited to the socials? Or the miserable neighbour? In Harold Hill, there's a post office. There's nothing extraordinary about that. But there is one person who works in that post office who really sums up the little Mr. Book of Mr. Grumpy. And I get so challenged when I go in there and think, I could go and talk to him. I could be his next customer because I know everybody else is doing all they can to avoid it. Or I could take an easy life and deal with the nice smiley lady. Back into your groups. What are the challenges of associating with those others will not? How can you connect with those people around you? And do you need to add to your list from the previous question? Off you go. Okay, shall we? I know those are big questions and a short time to discuss them, but hopefully that's some food for thought. We've got two more. We're not going to discuss this one, and then we'll come to one last one to discuss. I think, as we mentioned on the reflections of the readings, is that this man had obviously heard about Jesus. Jesus was obviously consistent with his gospel so that people like this man with leprosy wanted to draw near to him. Jesus was consistent with his gospel. Are you consistent with saying that you are a Christian? Now, this is a really tough question, because not one person in this room is perfect. Not one of us here has any right to stand before God except through the amazing grace and forgiveness of Jesus. But is there a consistency in our approach to life? A set of values, maybe, rather than a set of practices, which shine through, which enable people to feel, when I have a problem, that's the person I need to go and talk to. When life gets me down, who in my workplace do I have the confidence isn't going to gossip? Who in my workplace do I have the confidence is going to treat my mental health challenges with compassion and with mercy? Who in my workplace is more about people than final product and bottom line numbers? Now, I don't think for a Christian any of those things should be a massive challenge. But they are, aren't they, for us? I mean, let's be honest. Said Alice and I have a part-time job and we've just started a business to run part-time, and all of a sudden it becomes about spreadsheets and all sorts of other bits and pieces. You know, I'm doing parenting coaching, Alison's doing forest schools. It's got nothing to do with money, really. Hopefully, they're both kingdom things, but we still can't go overdrawn on it. And so all of a sudden, you get distracted. Now, thankfully, that's all in the privacy of my office, except I've just told you lot, please don't tell anyone on Harold Hill. Those are my challenges. People knew what Jesus was about. Do people know what you're about? One of the amazing doors that opened for us on Harold Hill was leading and delivering parenting courses for the local authority. And one of the things that the parenting courses talks about is the first and important thing as a parent is what you model. And I've done a lot of one-to-one work with parents. And I remember going around to the house of this lady, and she's a fantastic lady. But she was having real problems with her son. Her son was into BMXing, and bless him, they lived in a flat, so he didn't have a garage or an outside space. So he used his bed to work on two BMXs at the same time. And this mum showed me this boy's bedroom. And my first question, where do you sleep?
Oh, I manage it.
Just could, you know, it was like chain over and under duvet and just, it was awful. You know, someone with OCD's worst nightmare of a bed. And I'm not particularly cleanly and I thought it was horrific. Oh, I can't get him to keep his room tidy rich. I can't get him to do it. So I said, oh, can I have a look around the rest of the place? Yeah, of course you can. So she showed me her bedroom. It didn't have bikes on the bed, but it was just as much of a bomb site. Who we are reflects on what people expect of us. And that mum, although her words may have been saying your bedroom needs to be tidy, the state of her room just communicated untidiness in our house is okay. And that's the same for us as we meet people. If we talk about Jesus and yet behave in a completely different way, and I'm not talking about sinning because there's a danger here we can kind of guilt trip people into not being perfect and that's an awful thing to do. But I'm talking about trying to be consistent with the values. And I think that is actually in part saying, actually, I'm struggling with this and I'm wrestling and being honest with the challenges, particularly in the workplace or in family life. One of the things I hope we do really well with our children is say sorry, because I'm not a brilliant dad all the time. But at least I hope I can model the kind of value of, like, actually, I want to be forgiven and I want to offer my repentance for my poor parenting choices. I don't know about you, but the news this week has been a little bit interesting, hasn't it? And the thing that really shocked me about the news yesterday was the Archbishop of Canterbury. And we have this whole thing of secrecy all week long, don't we? Lots of debates about secrecy and what should be public knowledge and what shouldn't be. And yet there is a man who, with great humility and great, I believe, consistency to his faith, was just open and honest and said, yep, this has not been easy, and said, but my identity is found in Christ. I was blown away by the integrity that that man showed this week. And I am convinced that this week people will be like, actually, those Christians, especially because the contrast in the press couldn't have been greater, really. But I was like, wow, isn't that amazing that he would just not let the rumour mill get hold of that? And brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Are they going to come to you or me? Is there someone like the leper who's in deep pain? Someone on that list we talked about who comes across your path? May not be your calling in life to serve that person, because maybe you're called to be a teacher or work in an office or to be a parent or to enjoy retirement. But actually, there's someone who crosses your path, like this leper crosses the path of Jesus, and they're desperately looking for someone who has hope and forgiveness and compassion and mercy in their life. Will they say, oh yeah, them. They're the ones I need to talk to. They're the ones I need to have the courage to start a conversation with. I find that profoundly challenging. Especially as a minister, because we like to hide parts of our lives away because it's just a lot easier if we do that. The way we do church 1, 2, 3, we try and live as openly as possible. And that sometimes means me having to say, you know, I've got doubts about this bit. I'm struggling with the resurrection story this week. I want to believe it, but this week I'm struggling. And then lastly, and Martin said this, but I'm sure he borrowed it from someone else because it's quite profound. But the other thing we have about this story is we have this man who would have been totally rejected from society, and he comes in from a lonely place to meet with Jesus and gets restored. And then Jesus tells him to be quiet, I think for lots of good Jewish law reasons, which we won't go into. But I think there is good reason behind that. The man goes off shooting his mouth off to everybody he meets. Don't forget, earlier in the day, no one would talk to him. Now everybody's listening. And what does Jesus do? Jesus goes out to the lonely place where the man was. Like this lonely place exchange thing going on there. I don't know if you've ever really looked at what happens in the first chapter of Mark, but I think Mark was an evangelical activist. I'm guessing most of us here are evangelical activists. The evangelical church just tends to produce activists by meaning we do stuff and we do stuff and we do stuff and we do stuff. We're not like, I spent some time with Franciscans. They sit still for hours on end. Such hard work. Amazing people. Absolutely amazing people. But the first chapter of Mark is this. John gets baptized. Then Jesus gets baptized. Then Jesus goes and starts preaching. Then he calls his first disciples. Then he drives out an impure spirit. Then he heals many people. Then he goes to a solitary place. Then he comes and heals a man with leprosy. Then he goes on to heal a paralyzed man. It's like activity. Bang, 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 bang. But right in the middle of that is Jesus goes to a lonely place and prays. And that's at the beginning of Mark's gospel. At the end of this account in Matthew, Jesus goes off again to a lonely place. I suspect Jesus did a lot of going to lonely places. If we are going to serve those around us, what place does prayer play in your life? Now again, just like the holiness one, this is like another massive guilt trip opportunity, isn't it? Firstly, we're never holy enough, and secondly, we never pray enough, and let's all go home from here feeling miserable. But as I try and take this story really seriously for my own life and model of ministry, I see that prayer and isolation and reflection seem to be central in the empowerment of who Jesus is to serve these hard and difficult people. Lisa asked me earlier, what are the challenges? And one of my challenges is there's so much need where we are. I could have another four of me and there'd still be more need than we could fulfill. The biggest challenge for me is to learn that to serve just the bit of need that I can, I need to stop more. And that is so counterintuitive to me. But that seems to be how Jesus did it. I've never really worked in the workplace. I've always worked for a church. And let me be completely honest with you, that is a doddle compared to some of the stories I hear about my friends who go into real workplaces with real people week in, week out. I don't know how you do it. I think you're amazing. I think you have a higher calling than I have. But the only way I can see that either of us can fulfill our calling is through quality prayer. Quality time of sitting and saturating in who Jesus is. If we'd had time, I'd have got you to discuss the questions, what does prayer for wisdom and patience look and sound like? What does prayer for wisdom and patience look and sound like? And why does the human need time in silence? Why does the human being need time in silence? I would deeply encourage you to see mission as those around you. Those you know you are called to and those who would cross your path this week. I would encourage you to be associated with those for whom others in your workplace, home, family do not want to be associated with. And that's the great part of being a church, because you can come back to here or to a small group or come on a Sunday and go, oh, I'm trying to be friends with this person, but everybody else in the office thinks I'm a Fruit Loop and pray for me because I'm struggling to work this out. I would encourage you to think, how consistent am I? And get some accountability and support for the values of the kingdom. And I would encourage you to develop a deep and rich prayer life in solitude so that you can deal with those who come across your path. Let's be still for some moments.